Hey, everybody. Welcome to the TechConnect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
All right, Dean, we're back on the AI train again this week.
Yes.
You know, because we can't stray too far away from it for too long these right. days.
Yeah. Just had it been a week or a hot minute that we hadn't talked about
I think it's maybe
AI?
Been 2 weeks or so. Okay. I don't know. I'm sure in somewhere in our tech beefs and bites we talked about
this
it at
true.
Some point
this
a little
is
bit,
true.
You know, in the past. Yeah. Well, but wisely this week, though, we have an expert on with us talk about all things AI. Someone
yes, we do.
That's using it, talking about it, exploring it. In fact, long before the whole LLM explosion and
freak out.
Yeah. The reason why everyone's talking about AI now.
Right.
Before it's fashionable, you know, the fashionable right. thing, if you want to call it that. We have Guy Marie Joseph joining us today from Connect Talk.
Yeah.
Again, he's been, you know, he's been talking the talk and walking the walk for quite some time now.
Literally living in AI.
Exactly. Yes. So he's going to help us, you know, talk about, you know, what's been happening beyond the LLM stuff, what was happening before, how that's informed the current conversation, what's driving AI solutions forward beyond those right now. We are going to talk a little bit about that LLM side, though.
Sure.
He's done exploring in that to maybe give us some insights in productive and useful ways to use it, you know, beyond just writing and making, you know, interesting images and stuff, you know, making dragons on unicorns or something, I don't know.
Yes.
And then we're going to also talk a little bit about selling AI solutions and his recommendations for going out there and finding partnerships and how you should approach the sales side.
Absolutely.
Of this business.
So, yeah. Really good stuff today.
Yes. And covering some practical things on the AI side. Not pie in the sky, but some practicality, I think, here.
Where the rubber hits the road.
That's right.
That's right.
All that plus our usual value to the VAR and what's tech connecting with us. It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
As I mentioned, our guest today is Guy Marie Joseph. He is the president and co-founder of Connect Talk. Guy Marie, thanks so much for joining us today. We love having you on the show. Dean was very impressed when he met with you at one of our executive summits some time ago.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, we got to get him on the show.
We got to get him on the show.
He knows his stuff about AI. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had a great presentation. So welcome aboard. We're happy to have you. Tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to Connect Talk and maybe, you know, why you've become so embedded in the AI conversation.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. Connect Talk, we founded Connect Talk in 1989 and focusing on information technology and cybersecurity. And the funny thing is, right before starting the company, I was doing my master's degree at McGill University in education psychology. I was working in the medical center for education and focusing on AI and medicine, and which led me to do my master's degree in the developing a diagnostic model for reasoning so that I can, you know, develop an expert system because, you know, in those days, some 30 years ago, we didn't call it AI, we called it expert systems. And that's what I, you know, did my master's degree in, developing a model and taking that model, using some expert systems, that existing systems, in order to do both expert systems in application in medicine and hospitals, and also in intelligent tutoring system, which is for training young medical students. And that's how I got involved in AI. And let's say I spent about maybe 9 years, you know, doing the work at McGill. And eventually left that, started a company, and to my very surprise, AI is starting to be in the mainstream again. But in the days when I was really interested in it and working in it, the only thing we had you know, a couple of Lisp machines and Prolog machines, and you know, we were in a lab and computers, and all we did were working on that and not realizing that that was not real world. And today it's exactly the opposite that's happening.
Isn't that wonderful? He's like OG. He goes back. He's got the pictures of the old machines. Yep. And do you ever reminisce about that, Guy Marie? Maybe some of those old computers that you had and you know, or are you glad those days are gone and you have these new modern, you know, stuff that can compute a lot faster?
Well, this is funny because I remember the first time someone from Xerox came to do a presentation and he had a computer in a box and another big box was the memory, you know, for the computer. And when and it was open, he had to slide it in and had a fan. So, you know, in those days, it was not about we didn't have powerful computers. But what we have today is probably 100 times, you know, more performing. And sorry, we have the magic of the internet, and the cloud, which, you know, if we had in those days, I probably wouldn't be here today because I probably would be, you know, doing what I loved at that time, doing research, you know, in AI and medicine, but. You know, that's how it is.
That's how it is. That's right. C'est la vie.
Well, that's awesome. And yes, I appreciate especially the OG-ness here of talking about AI, living the world of AI before we even called it AI and before, again, us lay people, you know, or the rest of the world had any clue what this stuff was about.
That's right.
And also in a very important field for that matter, too. But yeah, obviously the explosion of AI discussion over the last couple of years has happened because of the LLMs, because of ChatGPT and Gemini and all these other platforms that people are using and Midjourney and all this stuff. Everyone's like, oh, hey, we can create things and ask questions and do all this cool stuff. Everyone, you know, understands that. But again, this tech's not new. It was already on a growth trajectory even before there. So tell us a little bit about what else you think has been driving AI solutions beyond the LLMs right now. What, you know, what is getting us a little further down the path to where we need to be in the world of artificial intelligence that's not about what you can type into a program and get spit back out at you real quickly?
Well, I usually make the joke that, you know, we talk about AI, we forget AI has two components. There's the A part, which is, you know, what we have today. But there's the I part, which is a more complex and more interesting part, the intelligent part. We forget that, you know, for any entity to be intelligent, there are some important constructs that they need to have. And some of these constructs are part of theoretical constructs, whether it's be linguistics, cognitive psychology, you know, all these things are important. And but we also forget that, you know, intelligent, there've been so much research on defining intelligence and representing intelligence and understanding intelligence and how it applies to what we do. So I think that, you know, in the days, we didn't have the power of the computing power that we had today. We didn't have them. We had great models. We have still some people that are doing some incredible work in the area of medicine, in the area of cybersecurity. You know, we have much more power now. But, you know, what I think is really important is the fact that the theories around intelligence as it applies to AI has matured a lot. You know, we have great models of representation. We can now define neural network in something other than the original PDP-11 books. And I say that if anybody who's listening, you know, didn't hear me mention the PDP-11 books, that would be bad. So I mentioned it. I'm very happy of that. But you know, this is where it all started. So because of we had very good theories, we have very good models, whether they be language models that we see today in the application of ChatGPT or other models or cognitive models that we see in a lot of the medical work, okay, we had that and they were well developed. What happened is what we didn't have before was the computing power and the architecture we had. We now have it. And I think it's, you know, those two come together and we're only beginning to see the implication of, you know, artificial intelligence as it applies to more than just the hype, the talk. Okay. Because it's more than that. You know, people think of, you know, AI and they say, well, this is great. you know, how are you going to train it? How are you going to have it learn? It's not how you're going to train it because it's not about the data. It's about knowledge. It's about how you represent the knowledge and how you use the knowledge using natural language, which is, you know, what we have from linguistics, great linguists that develop these theories.
That's interesting. You know, the bifurcation of that. And let's talk a little bit about more about the knowledge, if you will. I mean, so, I mean, to me, you know, when you think about where AI is today and where it's kind of trending towards, you know, there's a lot of discussion around, well, it's you need the data. It's a manipulation of the data and the training of the data, which I guess is a truism. But what you're implying is, well, that doesn't really mean anything if we can't transfer the knowledge back to the human experience. Am I encapsulating that correctly?
Absolutely. And this is probably the first time I hear someone talk, I will say, intelligently about it. Because, you know, people misunderstand information and knowledge. Information or data is not knowledge. Okay, it's facts. So you can have all the facts in your head. You can have all that, but it doesn't mean you can apply it. You can use it. And the real, what is really great that we have today that I'm really excited about is we're developing algorithms to see how we can transform the data into knowledge and apply it. This is the challenge. This is real artificial intelligence, because the algorithms that are not just to say, you know, I have a list, I have a database, and I can search, and which you know what, Google does it, and you know, Microsoft does it, and it's about that. It's about, you know, the algorithm, and the algorithm, okay, relies on theoretical constructs of knowledge representation. How do you represent the knowledge? How is the knowledge manipulated, and then to give you the result that when you go see a doctor, the doctor will take a quick look at you and he's not going to say, oh, well, you know, he comes, he has this, he has that, it may be this, maybe that. He has a first look at you and then suddenly he says, I think, and when he looks at you, he goes, you say, uh-oh. Well, that represents an incredible amount of activity, an incredible amount of brain activity, because that one look means that the doctor has already formed an idea of you, what you have, what you may have, and it's incredible. And this is in a split second. So what AI technically is, these algorithms, okay, how do we now develop these algorithms to do this, okay, the way that an expert does it, which is reaching the real challenge. And again, we have everything we need today. Well, you know, some researchers will say we have the base. Now it's really how do we apply it? But we have to move away from just the hype. We have to move away from, you know, saying that, okay, well, you know, I can generate text. I can do to any purist, they'll tell you this is nothing. I mean, Eliza was built God knows when, a long time ago. Okay, could do this. Eliza couldn't do it the way ChatGPT does it today because it didn't have the computing power. But guess what? It could do it at a lower scale. So there's nothing new.
Yep. There's nothing. That's right. Right. Yeah. What's old is new, which is exciting. And so in the commentary there, though, when I think about it is you look at the trend and maybe I'd like to get your take on this. It seems as though, you know, the universe of the AI is now moving into tailoring AI for, and I'll use quotes here, specific domain. So where people are starting to win or where applications are starting to have traction, it's where, you know, AI models can be applied in specific domains that are, you know, again, relevant to an entity like a hospital, like a doctor, like a whatever, you know, very, very specific, so that the knowledge that's coming out of the information can be pertinent to those that are involved in that. Is that why we're seeing this kind of this trend, Guy, towards the specialization of AI modeling and niche development of AI and things of that nature?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because this is exactly it. Okay. There's an area in cognitive psychology we used to talk about domain knowledge. Okay. Having the domain knowledge allow us to understand a problem. The great Herb Simon, in human problem solving, always said, you know, in order to solve a problem, you have to understand it. In order to understand the problem, okay, you have to have the domain knowledge to take the problem, set it apart, okay, understand it, and then find a solution. So yes, we are there today, because the thing about AI, AI is very good at very knowledge-rich areas because we now have powerful computers, very good algorithms and different algorithms, okay, that allow us to manipulate a lot of volume of data. If we can manipulate a lot of volume of data, large volumes of data, and we have the computing power, now, if we have the let's say, the algorithm with the theoretical construct to understand it, now we can go into a specific area and specific domain because, you know, it's more control. So we can go in a domain and do something. So this is where we are today. And there's no doubt about it. Yes, I think, and this is my personal comment, I think that this is the next step. The domain knowledge specificity you just said, this is the next step. We had the hype before. Okay, now we have the next step where we're looking at domain knowledge and we are now trying to get specific models. We talk about neural networks. This is exciting because we're now seeing the application of models of thoughts, in neural networks, for example, as they apply to a specific domain, because you can't apply it very general. You can't. But we're seeing that, and this is what's great, because I think that this, once we get beyond that, we will see we will see more practical application of AI in areas that maybe we didn't think. But that's going to be, you know, much more exciting, and which is really what AI is supposed to be, the intelligent part. We're focusing now on the intelligent part, on the transformation of data into knowledge. That's where we are today, and that's exciting. For someone like me, this is extremely exciting.
Yeah.
No doubt. I appreciate this angle too, because, you know, when I think of on the LLM side of things in particular, because that's where I've got the most experience with a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's already very obvious when something has been created by ChatGPT mm-hmm. or Midjourney. Mm-hmm. And it's also obvious when someone copy pasted, essentially, like, mm-hmm. hey, I asked ChatGPT something, here's what it gave me, and I just copied and pasted this into wherever and used it. It's already very, very obvious to a lot of people that that's happening. Mm. And I think this is an example of that idea of taking that a step further. You know, like if I'm using it for some information, I'm not going to copy paste. I'm going to take it. I'm going to apply my own writing skills and knowledge and insights, my way of framing things mm-hmm. that are a little mm-hmm. bit different. It's like when we had Cordy on talking about Midjourney in the past, you know, sure. he's mentioned like, hey, you can do it. It'll spit something out of you. But if you want something good, you keep adding additional layers and prompts. Or mm-hmm. maybe if you're a designer, you take it out and mm-hmm. do some of your own work around that too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's at the very base level again. But, you know, I think to Guy Marie's point, expanding that out to the whole world of AI is that, you know, rather than just, you know, let it spit something out and say, all right, that's it. That's all I need. It's how does that help us as human beings,
mm-hmm.
our knowledge, our intelligence, the computer in our brains that's mm-hmm. still infinitely more powerful than mm-hmm. those computers are just mm-hmm. yet. How does it let us get to where we need to go?
You know, it's interesting that you say something very important. You know, we at Connect Talk, we have a biweekly technology meeting. And in those meetings, it's an hour. We have one part about, you know, new technologies and area we are. We have a second part that, you know, that's AI. And, you know, when we talk about it, you know, my first question is, okay, guys, where do you see it applied in what we do to allow us to be more productive and to benefit our customers? And, you know, what new tools that you see? And everybody, they tell me the same thing. They said, you know, yes, ChatGPT is interesting because if I'm going to do a report, I need some information. I can ask ChatGPT some questions, but I will provide him the context. And this is so beautiful because, you know, we think of ChatGPT as the know-all and end-all. It isn't, because everybody will tell you, for it to be, you know, good, you have to provide the context. Once you provide the context, it gives you information. You now have to process the information and change the information, validate the information, and then you can do something with it. So, yes, you know, we are using ChatGPT in some of the reports that we're doing, not necessarily for content, okay, but more for structure, much more for ideas. So, yes, it is very good at that. And, you know, when I talk about the tools, one of our programmers, he said, well, you know, I use Copilot. And, you know, what's interesting is I use Copilot. I say, give it a context, some code. I look on the internet to see what people say about certain problems, because very often they will use Copilot because they have a problem in some of the code they're generating. And they say, I look at what people say and I look at that and it gives me an idea. And it's like, yes, this is where we are today. These tools are not tools that are the end part. They're not the end result. However, they are tools that will generate some ideas for you to structure. Okay, so you don't copy paste. You never do that. Okay, however, it gives you an idea. Sometimes there are angles you didn't think. You say, oh, this is interesting. Well, yes, I may develop that, you know, and you do that. So yes, these tools are great. And this is what, anyways, this is what we do internally. And it's, you know, as I said, well, we need to find ways to, you know, use AI both in our productivity, and also how we can benefit what our customers do. That is different from saying, yes, I have, you know, cybersecurity solutions that use AI for it. It's aggregating a lot of data, finding patterns based on something that is defined by NIST to give you a result. But a human still have to see the result and determine and say, hey, is, you know, is that out of context or in context? So anyway, this is how I and some of my colleagues see it, you know, about the use of AI. And again, I think every company, every IT company, okay, should have a strategy of how to integrate AI in their business. You know, you have to do that because they are great applications, but you got to understand the applications is going to help you be more productive. The application, the result, ChatGPT is not going to make you better. Okay? You know, ChatGPT cannot make you better. But ChatGPT can allow you to become better at what you do. Okay? You know, we have reports. We have application reports. We take those reports and feed them in ChatGPT to see patterns, okay, where we didn't see them. We never had these tools before. Okay, we have these tools. We can look at that and say, oh, this is interesting. And then we can say, well, you know what? Maybe in the application, we should show these things. So we can now build a dashboard based on what we saw in the pattern that generated by ChatGPT. I can say, hey, this would be more interesting to our customer. So in our application, you know, instead of just having a dashboard and a bunch of things that are not necessarily useful, but now we can provide more useful information to the customer on the application that they're using.
Guy Marie, where do you see some of this going? Because, you know, I'm fascinated by, I mean, LLMs obviously have an impact in that there's that, the humanness, meaning, you know, now we can communicate, you know, in a way that you don't, I guess, need to be a programmer, you know, using air quotes, that you may have had to have been in the past to now interface with specialized AI and get knowledge out of it. I see that as kind of part of this revolution, I guess, right? The hybrid use of LLMs with other AI techniques. Do you see companies kind of going down a path where they would employ a data scientist and that data scientist would understand how to utilize an LLM so that you could integrate with other AIs to facilitate business needs or things of that nature? I mean, it was interesting that you kind of opened up a little bit about what you guys do at Connect Talk, and I wish we did some of that stuff the same at Blue Star, where we're querying ourselves, you know, how can this impact us? How can it not? Mm-hmm. To me, the logical next step would be, okay, well, then let's start utilizing some of these systems as you are. Do you think that's where companies will go, or do you think there's going to be, you know, a business out there for companies to exploit that and develop these types of things? I don't know. I know this is kind of a curveball question, but just
that's actually kind of related to what we were going to talk about anyway. Yeah.
Actually, I need to quote two of my friends that when I was at McGill, one is in philosophy, the other one is in psycholinguistics. And at one point, the three of us said, you know, we'd like to write a paper on, you know, the difference between information and knowledge. So realizing that they're not the same. Information is not, it's not knowledge. It's information. It has to be transformed. What I think is going to happen is more and more people, companies, okay, are going to get into that business. Okay. They don't have a choice, because to provide value to a customer, you need to understand the customer. You need to understand what they do. But in terms of that, there's so much data. There's just too much data for the human eye or for you to sit and understand. So I think what's going to happen is we're going to see the development of a lot of tools to help us understand our customers' data. Okay. And then we can go and talk to them and say, you know what? Based on the data that I see, let's say, for example, you know, one thing that we see people talk about in mobile devices, battery usage. Battery usage is probably, it's the simplest and lowest grade thing that you can have. Okay. But so important, because without that, you cannot use a device, right? So when you look at this, you say, okay, well, you know, the life cycle of batteries, the batteries weren't recharged and things like that. That's a lot of data about something like battery usage. But what if we could take all that data about battery usage and patterns and say, you know, this is a pattern that we see developing on how you recharge your mobile devices, for example. And then you can start the conversation and saying, well, why? Okay, this is what the data of what you do tells me. And we can use AI to, you know, get all that data, all that information, transform it to useful data. And now we could look at it and say, well, you know what? Maybe we can have some tools now to tell us, this is a pattern you have in department X. This is a pattern you have in department Y. So again, my friend Dave Litz and Mike Dillinger, I need to have a plug for them, because they're so important in my life and when I was a young kid. You know, I think that's where we're going. We're gonna go into transforming data into knowledge. And that is different from just CPU and algorithm. That's where we're going. And I think that's what companies are expecting more and more from us, because they want us to help them. The challenge is we have to be more productive. How do we be more productive? You know, we have the day-to-day. There are a lot of things we do we don't see. Our job as partners is to say, okay, well, this is a solution. This is the data generated. It's your data. It's not mine. Okay. However, the data shows me this pattern. The data shows me, oh, well, you know, your customer, Mr. Customer, your customers, okay, are having these and these issues. And how you manage them, this is what it's telling me. And now we can make decisions and say, this is a good solution. This is a better solution, where you probably need to integrate into other solutions. So that's where I think we're going. And we don't have a choice anyways, because we have to provide value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. That's a great point. Yeah.
Well, then let's flip to the other side of this equation then, which is selling AI solutions. So, you know, we understand a little bit about how to potentially use them internally. And in fact, we're going to talk a little bit more later about how ConnectTalk is really embedding with this stuff and using it. But what about the selling side here? You know, what should VARs be looking for when they're selecting AI-enabled partners, you know, when they're trying to go out there with folks that, you know, suggest that, like, they can use AI to make businesses better? Are there any red flags they should be watching out for? Is there anything, you know, to make sure that you're asking and vetting with these potential partners to ensure that you're going out and delivering good AI-enabled solutions to your ultimate customers too?
Well, you know, this is the challenge we face, because, you know, and I will use one example, and I hope they're not going to, you know, hit me on the hand because I said something bad. IBM has IBM Watson. IBM Watson is the of the, okay, in AI. Everybody knows that. And it's been there for a long time. Okay. And we've seen the application of Watson in so many areas. Now, when you say sell AI, and I remember we're still IBM Watson partners, when they say, okay, how can we use IBM Watson, okay, in developing solutions? It was so difficult because it is very costly. And I think at one time when IBM didn't know how to monetize, because, you know, we're talking about a lot of algorithms. We're talking about, you know, CPU power. We're talking about all these things. And it's like, well, you know, how do we make it accessible to us? It's very, very difficult. Okay. And I think once, and I'm just using one example. Hold on a second. sorry. And I'm using one example of you know, IBM Watson, but there are so many others out there. Okay. But the challenge we face is for IBM to say, how do we have IBM Watson be like Office 365? You know, if you remember Microsoft Office before, it was on your computer, Office, that's what it was. And it was quite limited in terms of solutions that we could provide. And if you remember at that time, Microsoft didn't have anything in terms of mobility. Well, turns out they said, okay, now we've moved away from, the license. We moved to 365, but all other services we can offer, and it is now mainstream, and we continue to develop. I think we are at the same position, okay, is that people who have solutions like IBM and Watson, they have to find a way to make it reasonable, okay, or accessible for partners so we can embed our solutions and use these services, okay? That, I think, once we get beyond that hump, and it's not an easy one. It's not easy for IBM, okay? But if we get, beyond that hump, then we're going to see the real value, because we have the data, we have our customers' data, we have our data, we have it, it's ours, we have it. It is, let's say, semi-structured, okay? But enough to say, if we had something accessible like Watson, and we have the data, and we have an idea, we can, and with all the algorithms that they have, if it was accessible for us to use, then we would see the real advancement. Okay. And I think this is my view. And I again, as I said, I only mentioned this is only IBM Watson. There are so many others out there. But for us to be able to offer AI solutions, we need to find a way to do this, to turn the Office to the 365 and to offer so much more around it. That's what we need to do. If that doesn't happen in our industry, it's going to be too hard, because we don't have the computing power. We don't have the knowledge and the algorithms that are built. We don't have the manpower to have so many people to develop that. We don't have the luxury of hiring data analysts or data scientists, as they call them. Okay, we don't have the luxury of doing that. Okay, nonetheless, we're at a time where it's not the what's important for our customers, it's the data. But not the raw data, because the raw data is sitting somewhere and it's there. But the data is there. How do we transform the data into knowledge to allow them to service their customer better, to be more competitive, to be more productive? That's the challenge.
And I know you're an advocate that you would have resellers start embracing AI now. Right, because it'll be
tomorrow's too late on this.
Less opportunities for you in the future if you don't start getting into it today. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I think, and it's the perfect timing right now, because now we need to understand it. Okay, and understanding it is not okay. I'm gonna grab subscription to ChatGPT and I understand it. It's not that. There are so many tools. And like any new technology, there's a lot of tools, a lot of stuff, but the good ones are going to go, drop and things like that. So, but we need to understand it. We need to understand some of the foundations. We need to understand that. And it's not easy to understand. Okay, so we have to talk about it. We have different people who read different things, different videos. I saw just someone send me a great video today. On YouTube about AI. And I said, great, you know what? Our biweekly meetings, okay, everybody has to provide a link, a document, something about AI and how, as it pertains to us. We have to do that. So we read it, look at it, and learn. We have to do that, okay, because the timing is now. Because if you don't understand it, you'll just focus on the hype and you're going to miss the boat. It's not easy. It is complex, okay, but understandable. And yes, we have to have it part of our strategy, and we have to start learning about it, and we have to do it now, because later, by the time the 365 operation happens, if you didn't understand it, it's too late. The boat's going to go right by you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you advocate partnering. I mean, a way to do that is to start partnering with AI partners, right? Start figuring out who some of these folks are.
Absolutely. And you know, they are great data scientists. Partners. We have a partner that we work with. That's all they do. They're data scientist partners, and they're there to allow us to model our data, shape our data. Okay. And they're very good at it. And I think that, you know, they're if we cannot develop that expertise in-house, it's not possible. And you know, you can't just say, well, I'm going to go get a university student. Yeah, the university student will come do something, but when the university student leaves, you're stuck with what? You don't understand what they've done.
That's right.
Okay. Whereas if you work with a partner, you will understand it. And then you can say, well, you know, with a partner, I can have a customer project and you know, define it more. And you have the data scientists to model the data, allow you to understand, help you understand the data and do something with it. Absolutely.
Man,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah.
So go out there and find some partners. Oh, and by the way, if you're looking for those partners, one, go back to the Tech Connect podcast feed, because there's probably a half dozen or more that we've talked to in the last couple of years or so. Mm-hmm. Or come to us at Blue Star. We'll be happy to introduce you to some of those folks, because we got a few insights,
or good people like Guy Marie he's connected too. Yeah,
there's a reason why we bring all these brilliant people on the podcast to talk about this stuff, because they're people that we trust to help you out with these kind of things.
So absolutely,
don't hesitate to ask.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're gonna have Guy Marie talk a little bit more about what they're doing over at Connect Talk here in a moment. But as always, I want to thank our sponsors here on the Tech Connect podcast. We appreciate everyone that sponsors the show. Mm-hmm. Our Tech Connect program, which is a way that we've been bringing in a lot of these AI-enabled ISVs into the channel and giving you the opportunity to partner up with some of these amazing folks to go out there and drive new solutions. Of course, if you like the show, as always, we need you to like the show. We need you to subscribe to the show. Leave us comments, leave us ratings and reviews. Mm-hmm. And most important of all, send ideas into us. We're almost at 200 episodes.
Yes.
And a lot of these has been stuff.
It's helpful when people give us great ideas.
You and I have come up with a lot of episodes. Yes. We've had our wonderful sponsors and partners help us come up with some. But there's times when we're just like scratching our heads, like, what are we going to talk about this week? You know,
because it's hard to read the audience when the audience isn't responding.
Exactly.
Right?
So that is my challenge.
Give us your knowledge.
You. Yes. If you're a regular listener and you're like, yeah, I like what these guys are doing, just know that, you know, sometimes it could help if you give us a little bit of a push.
Send us an idea.
Give us a suggestion. So you can always email us those suggestions. You can always also, if you go down to the show notes for our episode, whether you're watching on your podcaster of choice or you are in YouTube, you can go down to the show notes and find a link to leave us a topic idea. Just for doing so, we will send you a Tech Connect podcast t-shirt. Even if we don't end up using the idea.
There you go. You get a free shirt out of it.
But you get a free shirt out of it. So please do that. And as always, don't hesitate to reach out to us. You can find us on Blue Star's LinkedIn page. You can also email us, techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, let's wrap things up, as always, starting with our value to the VAR.
Yes.
And Guy Marie, like I mentioned earlier, you kind of hinted a little bit at some of the things that you at Connect Talk are doing in particular. I love the kind of regular meetings where you guys are constantly discussing, you know, AI solutions and what's happening in the world of AI and challenging yourselves to figure out what it can mean for you. But talk a little bit more about that from the reseller perspective. What are some more examples of things that you guys are doing to use AI to help improve not just your business, your internal operations, but also go out and build better customer solutions and better relationships with your customers as well?
Well, one of the things we have one application that we have, it's designed for retail. That's the easy example. I'll give you two, the easy one and the hard one after. And in that application, it's like a fitting room. So people, you know, when they want to try something, okay, they go in a fitting room and they ask requests for, you know, other products. And at the same time, okay, we can integrate with the POS and determine what is requested, what is purchased. So, you know, we're working with an AI partner to develop a model, okay, to be predictive, to be able to provide data to the customer, okay, of, well, you know what is tried and not purchased? And there's a reason for that. So we have a partner that we work with. They're data scientists, and we actually develop a model with them, with IBM Watson. And we're really hoping that, you know, that application, we can continue and grow that for our customers, because that type of data is the data that a retailer really wants to know. because it's going to help them with their inventory. It's going to help them to be more efficient. So that's one example in an application. The other example we have, it's in two parts. As I said before, we do a lot of wireless site survey, predictive analysis. We do a lot of that. And when we write a report, for us, it's not a question of saying that, we use a tool, go and collect the data and press the button, it generates a report and send it to the customer. That has no value because anybody can do that. Okay. However, what we try to do is to say, okay, this is, when we analyze the data, we get the information from the tool, but we analyze the data. Okay. When we analyze the data, we say, this is what we analyze, but this is what the customer does. An inventory. I have racks. What's the period that the racks are high or low, for example? What would the impact be on the density of the APs where they're positioned? Okay. So we use ChatGPT to provide the context to ask the question and see, what does ChatGPT tell us? We take that and say, take a look at what the customer has and say, hey, this is interesting. And then what we do at the end, when we do an exit survey, this is interesting to compare the data from the site survey and being used for 6 months, 7 months, almost a year. And we do the exit survey so we can see what changed in the customer's environment. And in addition to that, we say, if they do a lot of voice, we say, okay, were there issues? Where were the issues? Okay, in certain areas. So we use ChatGPT to give us a lot of this data. We analyze it and provide a much better report for both the site survey and the exit survey, and to be able to tell the customer, this is the pattern we have. These are the troubled areas. We should focus on that. Because it's not about to change, the equipment that you have, but it's more about to understand these are the problem. These are the problem areas. These are the patterns. And this is why we think these patterns are there. So we apply, AI to these two things. These are two concrete things, that we use. One for our customers with our application. The other one for one piece of work that, that we do. That is, wireless is not magic. Okay, it isn't.
No, it's a science, right? Yeah,
actually, you know what? You're absolutely right. It is. And we have to find ways to be able to help our customers because they don't have time. The only thing they do is they know that there's going to be 6E6. That's going to happen. What's the impact? Okay. Is it true that the density is not the same? And where you go to a customer and say, the density is not the same, they're going to look at you and say, yeah, and with density, I can't see density. Okay.
Right.
But when you explain it to them and you show them in the report and you compare it, then the customer says, oh, okay, I understand. So it's by period. It's this. So I can adjust what I do accordingly. So, these are two components that we use, AI for in our business. And, I hope it continues to grow because we're getting more and more challenges, especially in Wi-Fi RF signals. You don't see it, but it's there. And when you talk about interference, which is another area that, when you're in a building and there are people around you, they have interference, a band is saturated because of the noise that you have around, what do you do? So again, if we can use these technologies to understand this, to analyze that, and to be able to say, well, this is where it may be a problem. Okay. When we say where it may be a problem, then we can start thinking of solutions, okay, for the customer and not wait for the customer to say, my VP was there, he was doing a presentation and suddenly, okay, he was in a Teams meeting and suddenly it froze. And you say, this is the VP, this is the president of the company. This doesn't look good. put more APs. No, not really.
It's that knowledge, right? Guy Marie just kind of bringing it back around. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Well, it's brilliant for you to start utilizing, right, some of this AI to enable that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's funny? If you recall, last year at Vartech, we did a podcast, our on-site podcast about AI and the LLMs and stuff and practical business use cases. And Guy Marie was in the front row there.
Yes, he was, challenging us.
He challenged us and took us to task on some, and as very well he should have.
Oh, of course he should
have. Because we were woefully unprepared, I think, for that conversation because we hadn't done enough of our diligence yet. And we should have. Guy Marie probably just wanted to come and shove us aside and have the conversation himself, and we should have let him because he's clearly been playing with this stuff a little bit longer than we had at the time. So
good stuff.
That's great practical stuff, and hopefully our audience takes some good advice
to heart. Yes, absolutely.
Of incorporating this kind of stuff into their own business. And if you need more examples, I'm sure Guy Marie will be happy to help you. Help you out there and give you some more tips. All right, let's wrap things up as always with What's Tech Connecting with You.
Oh yes, of course.
This is our favorite segment. We get to talk about something in the world of tech, innovation, science, discoveries, or just a random topic we feel like chatting about today.
Yes.
Guy Marie, I'll let you kick it off here. What's tech connecting with you right now?
Oh boy, I think one of the challenges that we've seen more and more, it's around tools to analyze cybersecurity threats. They are more and more threats, and some of these threats are not that visible. And, we have to find a way to, when they happen, what do we do? The analyzing the threats, understanding how they apply and how we, provide correction. This is a very, very difficult one because, you can spend your time. I got an email from a customer when we said, we have to do an update to the phone system we install. The customer said, it's only been a year. Why should I, have to do an update? I said, there are vulnerabilities. And he goes, you didn't tell me that when I installed the system. And then I realized that he's right. I didn't, because the vulnerabilities that, are discovered are happening touch just about everything now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's like, how do we analyze that better? And that's an area that I would love to see some changes. And of course, the other one is Wi-Fi. I mean, RF is, we need to get better tools at understanding, RF. It's today, voice and data, they're not separate anymore. You no longer have the voice team and the data team, okay? Everything is one, but how do we understand it? And to make a customer understand that, not because I installed something today, I have a site survey, I install, I leave it there, and I go, and 2 years later, it continues to work. How? Can we have tools that allow us to analyze and understand better and certain patterns? These are my wish list.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like you're also giving some potential, topics. Maybe we go find some experts to talk about some of this stuff and give you some extra advice there too. Good stuff.
Guy Marie, do you think that quantum computing might be that nirvana to help thwart cyber all the threats out there, or do you see that as too pie in the sky, ain't going to happen kind of a thing?
Actually, I remember I went through an RSA meeting and Wilhelm Diffie I had an opportunity to see him, to meet him and actually even shake his hand, which to me was, I said, I'm never going to watch it again. And, one of the points he was saying, he said, you got to understand one thing. Quantum computing is great, but quantum computing is going to be good developing tools to prevent all these attacks. But at the same time, the hackers will also use quantum computing, as well. So, we need it. There's no doubt that things happen so quickly, so fast that it's going to change. But I think what's more important is the accessibility of quantum computing, in our environment, that's going to help us. It's definitely going to be a game changer. I believe that. It's not going to be a game changer in a sense that it's going to help us be more secure, because instead of, having that long a string for your security, you're going to have that long, not at that level. But we can start having quantum computing accessible, not to the desktop, but to certain internal systems. It's going to be a game changer. And that I really believe.
Yeah. It's fascinating to try to keep up with that. I don't know. It's otherworldly, if you ask me, but right. I try to keep my finger on
the
pulse.
But once upon a time, AI seemed otherworldly.
That's right. So, that's right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
It's what is that old? I think it was something, I don't remember who exactly said it, but said that, depending on your time in history and, and what's going on, that technology can seem akin and science can seem akin to magic. From a certain perspective, anything can seem like magic.
So. Well, I got some. Go ahead, Guy Murray.
Sorry, I had a, if anybody ever saw the movie The Imitation Game, Alan Turing is my hero. He's my, long life hero. I have all his books and posters at my, at home. I don't think anybody, during the Second World War would imagine that someone, a mathematician, would build a computer to decode something that was impossible to decode. Okay? And guess what? We did. We built it. And it changed the world forever. So I think it's the same thing. This is the benefit of technology. Technology will change what happens in the world. Technology will change what happened in the technology field and more, but it's going to change and we don't know where it's taken us. But it's going to be there. Definitely.
For sure.
Definitely. Yeah.
Embrace it, huh?
No
yes,
doubt.
Yes, 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 yes. Let's for example, my connecting with, do you like quiet?
Sometimes
it's hard to get away from the noise of everyday life and things of that nature. So engineers have developed a millimeter thick fabric capable of suppressing sound in large rooms or spaces, right? So, and what it does is the material acts like a sound mirror. So, Guy Murray, if you don't, I like it. Anything that has to deal with sound or audiology, for whatever reason, rings in my head because
quite literally.
Well, I'm a musician, and so, I can empathize in the fact that my parents and what they had to deal with being a drummer and practicing at home, but if I had had this material, now it claims that it can reduce noise, ambient noise, up to 75%. And indeed, the picture that they illustrate to do this is a person on one side of this material laying in a bed sleeping.
Right.
The person on the other side is playing a drum set. Now, I think that's a little bit outlandish because there's, but they claim that this, again, millimeter thick, capable of suppressing sound. So how does it do it? The fabric, even though, again, think human hair here, is a special fiber that vibrates when voltage is applied to it. And again, it creates the sound mirror. So what it's basically doing is canceling noise out, utilizing, that technique. So, but that's what they're claiming is that, now you could put this fabric between spaces that you want. You don't want the noise, right? Like if you have a music room, you don't want it. Well, you just put
a podcast studio
or a podcast studio,
right? Forklift beeping in the background.
There you go. There is some technology out there that's going to enable that. So I was fascinated by that and the kind of the technology behind it. So there's hope. Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe we should use this.
There you go.
Yeah.
We'll be the guinea pigs.
It's in MIT's labs right now. So I don't know that it's commercialized just yet, but like a lot of things that come out of MIT.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's someday coming. Soon. It'll come. That's right, Guy Murray. It's coming.
There
so
you
what's
go.
Tech connecting with
I like
you, John?
That.
Yeah.
All right. So what, Dean, Guy Murray, maybe both have an opinion on this. What is your ideal movie runtime? If you're going to watch a movie, how long do you want it to be?
I mean, it feels like 2 hours, but maybe we're conditioned to that. Like,
True.
It gets into the 3.5 hour. And then if you're not engaged to me, that's like, oh boy.
Okay.
I got to come back. Guy Murray,
what about you? Yeah. What's your ideal runtime for a film?
I think after 2 hours, we're that's it.
Yeah. Okay.
I doubt very much that whether we stuff ourselves with popcorn or whatever drinks or whatever is in the drink that we're doing. I think after 2 hours, to keep the concentration more than 2 hours, I don't know. I think it's...
Yeah, I get it. Well, apparently a recent study from Talker Research of 2,000 adults, these are just U.S. adults also.
All right.
They said that 92 minutes is the ideal runtime.
92, so an hour and a half.
Just a little over an hour and a half.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, what's interesting about this particular study, though, is that it's kind of contradicting some other studies. So just 2 years ago, Statista did one, again, with 2,000 Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Those over the age of 18, 48% said they prefer 2-hour movies, like you guys just said. All right,
fair enough.
And 28% said hour and a half. Mm. So, I mean, unless things have just dramatically changed in 2 years,
yeah,
it feels a little...
What's going...
The other part of the equation they kind of pointed out with this, though, that maybe is like, yeah, but really? Because... Three of the four highest grossing films of all time are over 3 hours long.
I knew you were going to go there. Titanic. I knew you were going to go there.
Titanic, yes. Avengers Endgame, and Avatar The Way of Water. All three
hours.
Over 3 hours.
But those were such good movies, I guess. I did put that qualifier in mind. You know, you get up to 3 hours, and unless you are engaged... You know, it can be painful.
That's my caveat, is I feel like, all right, we can all say that because we think, man, I don't want to spend more than an hour and a half doing anything because my life's busy.
What were the three again? Titanic?
Avengers the Endgame and Avatar the Way of Water.
Well, Avengers Endgame, I mean, that's just high energy, right? A lot of drama.
Yeah, exactly.
Titanic appeals to everybody. A lot of emotion, you know. Right.
And apparently, and Hollywood's not getting the message here because the average movie length is now 141 minutes. That's over 2 hours, 2 hours, 20 plus minutes, up from 110 minutes in 1981. Mm. Plus, there's also a lot of, you know, discussion about like, well, you know, we're in the streaming era now and post-pandemic when more people are watching
it's a series,
films at
right?
home.
Like, or cut it up into a series of,
right.
You know,
not everybody
hours.
Sits and watches something all in one sitting. I don't often anymore. I'd love to sometimes, but there are times I'm like, I'm watching half-hour intervals while I'm on the elliptical or something,
right.
You know, and
splitting
up a movie over 3 or 4 days.
And then
days
Miles comes in the room, and he needs something. It's like, well,
exactly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I think that's the caveat, too, is I think, like, when you're at home, maybe you have a limited amount of time, or if you're watching a family film, like, kids can only have a certain amount of, you know, expectation of attention, you know, to watch something. So it makes sense that those movies tend to be a little shorter. But I will admit, when I go to the theater, and I'm spending the kind of money it costs to go to the theater and get some snacks and sit down, I do want a big experience.
Yes.
And if that experience takes me 3 hours, and some of the movies like Dune Part 2 that I've seen recently, and again, that Avengers Endgame, like I remember that being, to me, that was one of the best cinematic experiences I'd had in a long time because it was this massive culmination of, you know, the story you've been following for years.
And you were enthralled the whole time.
Yeah, I didn't care that it was 3 hours. Yeah. I at the end, I was just like, I still want more. It's been 3 hours and I still want more. So I think that's, you know, I feel like this is one of those questions where you put someone on the spot and they're probably going to say like, yeah, I only want an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah.
But it just depends, you know.
I think you're hit on the situation. If you're at home, you want more snackable stuff, right? You need it in smaller. But if you're going to invest in going out, give me the 3 hours. Yeah. But you better keep my attention the whole time.
It better be worth it. If I'm going to spend 3 hours on a movie, it better be worth
God, the popcorn and pop alone. I'm dropping $20 on that? Yeah,
exactly.
Ay, ay, ay.
All right. That is What's Tech Connecting with us. Guy Marie Joseph, thank you so much for joining us today. Loved having you on the show. It is time for us to unplug. So until next time, hey, go out and strive for some knowledge, not just that information.
Right. That's exactly
right. Very important to understand things. I always like to say, you know, didn't you ever have that friend where he said, they're very book smart, they're just not street smart?
That's right.
To me, that's what this is about.
Oh, brilliant.
You know, find your street smarts in all of your AI applications and solutions.
Well, thank you for having me, guys. I really appreciate it. It was fun talking to you.
Thank you, Gary. Definitely.
All right, until next time, folks, please stay connected. TechConnect Podcast is brought to you by Elo. Self-service has never been easier. I mean, at least that's what Elo is claiming.
I love bold claims like that.
And I'm fond of self-service being easy.
Yes.
Introducing Elo's Wallaby Pro Kiosk Stand.
Mm.
The Wallaby Pro is changing the industry by making it easier than ever to configure interactive self-service solutions.
Mm.
Choose from wall, counter, and floor models engineered with configurations to fit any space in retail, restaurants, hospitality, healthcare, and corporate environments. Just add a 22, 24, or 27-inch touchscreen display.
27-inch.
You know, I'm a big fan of the touch screens. I'm a big fan of the self-service.
Yes.
I walked into a popular QSR
restaurant
recently.
Yes.
And all their, you know, self-service stuff was down and not working. And
oh, no.
I found that incredibly frustrating. I'm pretty sure I walked out and went somewhere else.
It was not Yellow Gear, really. Exactly.
Well, if you're looking for more options than what we just described, how about custom branded backer boards?
Oh, nice.
Ceiling pole to minimize foot footprint.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Makes sense. Space, especially if you got a little small SMB type store. Yeah. You know,
hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah. You can add a printer. You can add ADA keyboards, assist buttons. You can use Elo's Edge Connect. We're fond of that as well. Attach additional accessories. Oh, and the Wallaby Pro stand offers easy to access concealed housing for a power strip, power bricks, compute devices, cables, whatever you need. We always like that sleek, sexy look. You know?
Sexy. Yeah.
Where you can't see everything
cables.
Exposed.
Yeah, rat's nest.
I think back to my retail days. I had the gigantic computer and cash register. Yeah. And it was like this bundle of cables behind it at all times.
Yes.
That was just like just dust.
Gnarly, full of dust bunnies.
You get back there like once a year and it's just nasty dust. And you're sneezing like crazy.
Yes.
I don't think you have to deal with that.
That's right. That's right.
If you're ready to help your customers design the most customizable self-service solutions, start with the Wallaby Pro. Contact your Elo representative to learn more.